Morning, everyone. It is Monday, January 30, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Nice and warm, particularly around Sydney town. Look like everywhere around the state, pretty much. Pretty warm weather. It is late January after all, though. And last night, we saw Novak Djokovic win his 10th Australian Open title. His 10th. And that means he's on 22 Grand Slam triumphs. Excuse me, sorry. Which ensures that he joins Rafael Nadal, and he also assumes the world number one ranking once again. So he did it in straight sets there at Melbourne Park against Stefanos Tsitsipas last night. And two tiebreakers in the second and third sets. He just knew when he won that tiebreaker in the second set, it was going to be tough for Tsitsipas then. That was such a crucial moment in the match. Aryna Sabalenka won the women's final Saturday night. Well done to the two Aussies, Jason Kubler and Rinki Hijikata, who followed the Special Ks and won the men's doubles final. So back-to-back wins for the Aussies, for Aussies in the doubles there at Melbourne Park. But all honours with Novak Djokovic. He is class above. Clarkie, morning to you, mate.
Yeah, morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. Yeah, absolute genius, to be honest. The people can say what they like and have their opinion about things that have happened off the court about Novak. But, geez, you can't doubt him as a player. Absolutely phenomenal. Class above this whole tournament. Again, whether it was a myth or not, that leg injury at the start of the tournament didn't seem to affect him when he needed it. Just different level. So well done to him. Great to watch. The other thing I enjoyed over the weekend was watching Usman Khawaja in the BBL. My goodness, hasn't he found another level to his game as well and gets the Brisbane Heat through? But he gets on that plane and goes to India. I've got to say, boys, still a little bit nervous about our preparation going into this test series in India. I know it's been great to watch, you know, the likes of Steve Smith and Usman Khawaja playing the BBL finals, but I think in regards to test cricket being the pinnacle and trying to win a major series, I think the Aussie boys might have been better off getting over to India a week early and playing a first-class game.
Yeah, and we'll get into some comments made by David Warner and to his state of mind as well, and also what he thinks about going to the Alan Border medal tonight as well.
No.
We'll get to that, Clarky. Don't worry about that. Morning to you, Loza. How are you? How's the
weekend?
Good,
thanks, boys. Yeah, not too bad. Novak, wow, what a player. He was just too good. Too good all the way through the tournament. Takes him to 22 now Grand Slams, equals the great Rafa Nadal. Certainly in the conversation, isn't he, as the greatest of all time. I know a lot of people have their own differing opinions on who they think is the best player the game has seen, but he's certainly putting himself into that conversation. He was just way too good. So we move on. The Australian Open has been won by the great man, and we move on, hopefully, Middo, to seeing some wonderful cricket over there in India. I was reading in today's paper that the spinners have been having a spin camp here in Sydney at North Sydney Oval.
Similar conditions.
The heat has turned North Sydney Oval into a dust bowl.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so no, hopefully that's the best preparation for our boys.
Andrew McDonald, nothing to worry about. He says everything's sweet. They've replicated conditions there at North Sydney Oval, as Loza mentioned. They believe as best as they can to replicate what Nagpur will look like on what I think it's Thursday week, the first test.
The ninth.
Yeah. It's next Thursday. Mm. So it's around the corner in a big way. Just locally, though, wrapping up the Big Bash next Saturday with the final. So on Saturday night, the Sydney Sixers, they were on top.
Mm.
And then Perth was saved by an unbeaten 132-run partnership between Ashton Turner and Cameron Bancroft as well. So they won by 7 wickets with 9 balls to spare. And it means the Sixers will play the Brisbane Heat after Clarkie just mentioned last night. Usman Khawaja, superb at the top of the order for the Heat. 59 off 47 balls. Shaun Marsh not out 82, though, in the Renegades total. They posted 5 for 162, but the Heat 3 for 164. So Perth will host the final. They'll play the winner of the Sixers Heat game Thursday night at the SCG. Over there, though, they really get around their own teams over in the West. So it'll be a huge crowd, at least, for the final next Saturday night.
Tough to beat the Scorchers in their own backyard. I think their quicks use those conditions really well. They know the right length, the bowl. I know how to protect the boundaries there as well. And then they're batting. Well, when you play there all the time, you're more accustomed to it than anywhere else around Australia. So I think they are certainly going to be the team to beat. But this game against the Heat and the Sixers will be a beauty to see who qualifies, who plays against them.
Mm. Yeah, that game Thursday night at the SCG. Just into some rugby league news over the weekend, Loz. The Bulldogs put out a release, announced their captains. Took me a couple of times to read it to figure out what was going on. But they're going to have two on-field game day captains. So they are recruits, Reed Marnie, and I guess you could still call Matt Burton's only had 1 year there at the Dogs. So a recent recruit, I guess you could say. And they've got an overall club captain, Raymond Fatala-Mariner, who was, I think, out of the current Bulldogs squad, now that Josh Jackson's retired, has been there longer than any other Bulldog. And there's also a part of the leadership group. There is Josh Adokar, Viliami Kikau, and Max King. And as I mentioned, this is all filling the void left by Josh Jackson announcing his retirement.
Yeah, and I think that that says a lot, the fact that, you know, you've got so many people in a leadership sort of role and a leadership compartment, so to speak, because you've got, you know, club captains, you've got on-field captains, you've got off-field captains. So obviously they want to share the responsibility, but they look as though they've got a lack of leadership there and they're unsure of who the best leaders are. And it is a new squad this year as well. So obviously the coach wants to know who his players are. I think if it was a, you know, a coach going into a stable organisation with the playing group the same, I don't think you'd have this situation. But I think the fact that he wants to see who his leaders are, probably hasn't found out enough about his players. He wants to share the workload around. We'll see how it plays out. But you've got two on-field captains. I mean, you have captains that do a lot of stuff away from the on-field responsibility. But at the end of the day, I think we all agree that one captain is the preferable option. But when you're unsure, I suppose, this group of players, they're all going to share the role. So it's not like you're going to have six on-field captains. I think the West Tigers had six on-field captains last year at any one stage. So this year, you've got Reed Marnie and you've got Matt Burton, who'll be the leaders on the field. All the other leadership is just about growing a leadership group, I would assume.
Why wouldn't you just Burton and Marnie, one of them's your captain, one of them's your vice captain, end of story. And then all your leadership group and this other stuff you got going on, why does that need to be announced? Why can't that just be in-house? As long as the players know that, okay, we've got a club captain, okay, yeah, we've got a party captain, okay, we've got a colours the grass captain.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand why is every single thing need to go to the whole world? Just the captain and the vice captain.
The AFL, particularly AFL clubs, became really big on this probably 10, 15 years ago. They'd announced huge leadership groups.
You'd be a big deal. You're disappointed if you miss out because everyone's got a gig apart from five people.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a PR push coming from the Bulldogs because you have a look when they put the release out. It was Saturday, all for the Sunday papers, just a, you know, positive story in the news. This is our leadership group. Get everyone excited. Get the memberships up as well, Clarkey.
Well, I think it's also a sign that they're unsure of who their best people are to be leaders within the group. And they're trying to encourage guys to come out of their shell a bit.
So who's accountable, though? So is the club captain above the two on-field captains? Like who's accountable if something does go wrong here?
Well, the club captain, about off-field, like if there's an engagement that they want a representative from the club to go to, he's probably the man
to go that
goes and talks to the group. Like, you've got sponsors that you have to service as well. You know, you've got players that do a lot of work away from the field, and I suppose they just want to share the workload because if you're a Bulldog sponsor, all right, there's one or two players that you want. You either want Josh Adokar, you want Matt Burt. That's exactly right.
Of course.
So if you throw it all on them, they're doing everything. So what they're trying to do, I would assume, would be to try and spread the workload around so a lot of the off-field work doesn't come back to your best players. It comes back to other people in a leadership role that can go and service the sponsors the way that they'd like to be serviced.
He'd probably have a say in standards and obviously the C-word culture all that sort of stuff, and Marnie and Burton, very much game day. So yeah. they speak to the ref, address the team,
yep.
et
cetera. Yep. And I think, again, looking at the Bulldogs squad, looking at a new coach coming from the outside in, he'd be unsure of who his leaders are. Mm. He wants a bit more time to find out about them. If he was walking into a stable environment and you had your senior leaders there, there'd be no six-man leadership group.
I reckon in 12 months' time, Matt Burton will be leading that side. I mean, he's still so young.
Yeah, him or Reid Marnie. Yeah. Obviously, they've led with their actions during the pre-season, but they've invested heavily in both those players, so you'd think that they'll be consulted on a lot of issues, and they will need them to have big seasons if the Dogs are to move up the ladder. I mean, they've recruited as well as anyone, the Bulldogs. So I think there's quite a lot of optimism around. You look at their 1-17, it's very competitive and a chance of playing finals footy.
Lots of Novak Djokovic on front end, back pages of the papers today. A back page of the telly, tears from the Grandmaster is the headline there. And, his emotion certainly came out after he made it 10 Australian Open crowns, 22 Grand Slam titles last night. Perfect 10 is the headline on the back page of the Herald, and also the Australian. Djokovic serves up a perfect 10. He described the win as, he said afterwards, he admitted it's been one of the most challenging tournaments he's ever played in his life, considering the circumstances, not playing last year, coming back this year, obviously what was going on with his father off the court as well and everything surrounding that. So, yeah, you got to give him credit. I know I give him a lot on this show, but, I mean, he has stared a lot of distractions in the face and almost was fueled by it because he was dominant through the whole tournament.
I think the more you try and give it to him, the more that he takes that mentality of it's me against the world, and he thrives on that. And you see him play his tennis and he just looks too good. Like Tsitsipas is a very, very good player. I think number three in the world. Second time he's played Novak in a final, and second time he's come away as a loser. But he'll have a bit of he should win a Grand Slam at some point over the next 5 or 6 years in his career. But at the moment you don't see Novak slowing down. He's won 22 Grand Slams. And I'm sure he will beat, he's equaled Rafa now, hasn't he, on 22. So he's going to beat that record, you would think, and go on and become the greatest Grand Slam winner of men's events. So whether you like him, whether you hate him, he's certainly a wonderful tennis player.
And we'll speak to Roger Rashid, wrap it all up after 7:30 this morning. Big story on the back page of the telly as well, written by a man, Dean Bulldog Richie. Rue Beauty is the headline here. Cup hero Arnie locked in on four-year, $6 million deal is the headline here, and exclusive with the telly. So, Graham Arnold, there's a media conference called this afternoon, and Football Australia boss James Johnson is reported to be present there later. So the speculation is this will be the confirmation that Graham Arnold, after was virtually gone before the World Cup, leads us to a stunning result and a second round loss to a round of 16 loss to Argentina, where we push the world champions, the eventual world champions, all the way. And now he's set to shun deals for offers on the table from overseas, over in Europe, and continue as Socceroos coach through to the 2026 World Cup, which is in the US, Canada, Mexico in the US.
Well, they were amazing in the World Cup, weren't they? I mean, they went into that tournament, I think, ranked 38th. They've come out of it now, ranked 27th in the world. And he's got himself a new four-year deal. I'm sure a lot of people will know what type of young kids we've got coming through. And by the look of it over there in the World Cup, a lot of these players, if they stay fit and healthy, will be there again in 4 years' time. They all like Arnie. They all respect him. And they tend to play for him. So I think he's done a good job, really good job, since taking over from Van Marwijk. And I wish him all the best in the next 4 years. But the four-year cycle, it can gobble up a few. It can gobble up a few.
What about 6 months ago? They were just gone. He was the worst coach on the planet, had to sack him.
The only reason he survived is they didn't have the money to pay him out.
Yeah. Now the same people are offering a four-year deal.
It's tail between the legs stuff, isn't it?
Mate, if that's not the greatest example of result-driven world, I don't know what is. He was hopeless. Now he's a genius. What? It's the same guy with the same experience making the same decisions. Unbelievable how quick things, how quickly you get criticised and how quickly things can turn around. For just, better and for worse.
And, you know, the support of the players is obviously, you know, a big factor, no doubt, as well here. And that's one thing that was obvious with Arnie, was the support he had from those players.
I think that environment too. I think having an Australian coach in that situation can galvanise Australian players because they've got that way of, I don't know, just communicating, understanding the culture, what we're all about, what we're perceived to be good at, and that's sticking together and being strong. And the playing group, with their actions, showed everyone what they're capable of doing. They played well above their ability. Well above their ability. If you ask a lot of soccer people, they'll tell you that, you know, possibly we shouldn't have, you know, won any games, let alone a couple. And obviously we got beaten by France in that first game, and France just showed their class, and then we got knocked out by Argentina, who eventually went on and won the thing. Hmm. So our results in that World Cup were tremendous.
And remember, the next World Cup, there's 48 countries to be represented, up from 32. So touch wood, but qualifying should be far, I don't want to say easier, but obviously we should be punching our ticket. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, because we struggled in the qualifying for this World Cup.
Yeah, but there were a lot of reasons why we struggled too. I don't think we played a lot of games at home during COVID.
No, we didn't.
You know, and any sporting team will tell you they prefer to play at home. You know, play in front of your fans. It's always an advantage. And the Socceroos, they did it the tough way. We've got to thank the Grey Wiggle, I suppose, because he saved us. He was the man. Oh,
just wish it went to a shootout against Argentina. Mm. Could have wheeled him out. On the back page of The Australian as well, so Smith in box seat to win his fourth border medal is the headline ahead of the awards night tonight, the Cricket Australia Awards night. And also Green's lingering finger injury in all-round dilemma. Also on the back page of The Australian here. So the reports are indicating that Cameron Green won't be fit to bowl in the first test in India of Clarkey. So he has this fractured finger from Boxing Day, as does Mitchell Starc. And Mitchell Starc has, well, essentially been ruled out of the first test, although his recovery is apparently going really well. But he's not at this stage, he's not expected to play. So the dilemma is, do you pick Green as a batsman only, or do you bring in a Renshaw, a Hanscom, or someone else?
Oh, not if you go, if you go on a legitimate batsman, no, you keep Cameron Green. I think we need an all-rounder. I think you're going two quicks, two spinners, and an all-rounder in India. So if Green can't bowl, then you need, I think you need to bring in another all-rounder.
Who is there?
Not sure. Who's in the squad? We picked 18. Surely I've picked the second all-rounder.
Sure, I think have, because remember, Glenn Maxwell would have been probably the choice, but he went and broke his leg.
Yeah. Unless they go Ashton Agar as the all-rounder, if they think his batting's good enough, and go three legitimate quicks, play Nathan Lyon and Ashton Agar as the all-rounder.
Kerry up at 60 and Agar at 7.
I don't think Agar's batting's good enough in Indian conditions without a tour game to be batting at number 6. Or even number 7.
They put Kerry 6.
Still don't think it's enough. No. I think you need a, you know, Cameron Green is so important to that team in those conditions because his bowling is, as he bowls as quick as anyone. Mm. He's getting better. He's tall. He hits the wicket hard. He's quite accurate. I think he's a very legitimate third fast bowler, and that allows you to pick the two spinners. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with their first 11.
There's no all-rounder outside of Green, really.
Yeah. So
there's a couple of part-time bowlers.
So their only other option, really, is to go three legitimate quicks and then go Ashton Agar has to bat at, 6 or 7. Tough one. Interesting to see what they do.
And, the comments from David Warner, so over the weekend, said just that he's absolutely exhausted after the Sydney Thunder's loss to the Brisbane Heat. And, he said that he just wants a break and went on to get asked about the Alan Border medal. And he spoke about, a couple of the guys, Stoinis and Adam Zampa, are playing. Well, they don't have to go because they're overplaying in the 2020 comp with the UAE.
Seriously.
And Warner said, from his perspective, it would have been nice to have had another night at home, but it is what it is. So
don't look at me, Middo. Don't look at me. I made comments a while ago about what players thought of nights like these and got absolutely smoked. So, yep.
Yeah.
Look, David's comments are David's comments.
For sure.
I will say this. I don't think he's the only player that feels that way.
One thing I will say, though, Joe Public will go, well, you went and signed the contract to take X amount of dollars to go and play in the BBL as well.
Yep.
So, you know, you could have said no to that if you didn't want to go to the underwater battle.
Not really. I don't think he could have. I think David Warner, Steve Smith particularly, those two, were told they have to be part of a BBL team. Certainly if you want to play in the Australian 2020 team. So I don't know if that was the case. I think we've seen a huge push in getting the Australian players signed to a BBL franchise, particularly because we haven't got the best overseas players coming in available.
Imagine if David Warner said, I'm not going to play in the BBL. Imagine the outcry.
Didn't last year or the year before. He didn't have a team.
But people would be into him.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Oh, but if he now, like he's saying he's exhausted, we play a 4-test series, big series in India starting, what, Thursday week. If he goes and makes no runs in this series, what are we going to say then?
Well, you don't blame him. You blame the...
Well, I will be. I'll be blowing up about, well, again, we're not prioritising from a...
That's exactly right.
Executive point of view of Cricket Australia.
That's a given we're not prioritising. We haven't got a tour game in India.
Yeah,
if well, that's not the clearest example that we're not prioritising Test cricket, it's right in front of our face. We have Cricket Australia... have prioritised the BBL this year. Let's just look at what's in front of us right now. It's more important for these international players to play in the BBL than it is to go and play a tour game in India.
Yeah. And this year was more important too because of the television rights.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
That's what I'm saying. Look, Davey's in trouble for his comments. Mate, I promise you he wouldn't be the only player. He would not be the only player that's thinking that.
Mm.